Okay, we're going to start here on the two dots on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Over here we had a list from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai of five dvarim, five things. Now the Gemara is going to go through some of the items that he mentioned. First one is a chol shum kaluf. All of those items that he mentioned, which was shum, garlic, batzal, onion, beitzah, an egg, and water that had been poured or diluted already, any of those that were left overnight are problematic. So here the Gemara says, v'afal giv demantcha bisilta. First of all, even if it's placed inside of a basket, umitzaire v'chatime, and it's tied and sealed, ruach ra shorei alehen, the evil spirit resides on them. It's only true if they still don't have their skin or their cover on them, which was why we said they had to be klupin. Klupin means that they're already skinned or shelled. The eggs are removed. If their ikar or the klipa is still on them, then there's no issue. In terms of what ikran is, you would have thought that the ikar is the root that comes with it, or the stalk or the stem that comes with it. Rashi mentions the hair that comes with it. If you think about an onion, when you pull it out of the ground, the base of the onion has the little roots or the hair at the bottom. And same with the garlic. So that's what it seems to be Rashi is referring to. But in general, in the Gemara, Ikran refers to the stalk or the stem of the item. That's only if they stayed overnight in metallic kelim. If it's a kli, it's a utensil made out of neter, which is alum crystals or some sort of pitch, then they have the same din as matechet, as metal. Yochanan also gives the same qualification that leaving the water overnight is only problematic if it's done in a metallic kli. Kli neter, kli matechot dami. Kli neter have the same status as a metal kli. V'alan bebeit ha-gvarot. So here, someone who sleeps in the Beit HaGvarot, why would he sleep in the Beit HaGvarot? Today, should tishra alav ruach tumah, so that he should have the ruach tumah reside on him, and somehow that will give him some sort of revelation or understanding. And the reason not to do this is zimnin demisaknin le. Could be dangerous, so that it's not worthwhile because you could really endanger yourself. This brings you to a fundamental machloket with regards to these types of practices. Machlok between what I call the rationalists, the Rambam, the Ibn Ezra, and others who believe that the restriction against practicing balov, yidoni, chober, chober, and all of these items are because they're not efficacious. There's nothing to them. They are just a waste of time. The way you should go is to be Doresh at the Sham, to go to the Navi, and that's how you get the information that you need. Everything else is meaningless or worthless. As opposed to the other Rishonim, including the Ramban and many others, who believe that there is some sort of efficacy or value to these practices. It's just that Hashem offers you a better alternative. There are reasons, and each of the Rishonim has their reasons as to why you might be better off going with Hashem, partly because you will not stray after these other things, rather you'll go to Hashem and you will rely on Hashem as opposed to somehow making these into important types of practices or assigning to them some sort of godly powers. But not to say that they don't have some value in them. Others, Rishonim, believe that because they only give you part of the truth, they don't give you all the information, they don't give you context, they don't give you perspective. But from here, you see, from this Gemara, this is one of the items that's mentioned by them, is that there is efficacy to it. Gemara in Sanhedrin really talks about it in more detail, and there with Rabbi Akiva, that it seems to be, the indications from the Gemara are, that these practices do have value. Not necessarily that they're the right thing to do, but they do have the ability to give people information and to help them in some way, but nevertheless, the Torah still says that they are problematic and one may not practice them. And over here is one of those indications by the Gemara here that says that a person goes in there, shetishal avarach tumah, the Gemara doesn't say don't do it because it doesn't work, but the Gemara is saying here because because it puts him in danger. Notel tziponav is orkan l'shut arabim. Someone who cuts his nails and throws them out into the shut arabim. Why? Because a pregnant woman might pass over them and miscarry. That's only true if he takes them off with a scissors. And only if he does his hands and his feet together. It's only if he didn't cut something else afterwards. If he cuts something immediately afterwards, it's not a problem. all these qualifications, we're going to drop, and we say, no, we worry about it no matter what. The cutting of nails is problematic. And Tanu Rabanan, so this is the Gemara in Moed Katan, but Tanu Rabanan, Gimel Devarim Ne'amru B'tzipor Naim, three things are said about nails. Sorfan Chassid, if you burn them, you're a Chassid, which is better than a Tzaddik, which is Kovran, if you bury them, you're a Tzaddik. And Zorkan, if you throw them out, you are Rasha. Zorkan Rasha is based on what we just saw here in the Gemara, because it could cause problems in terms of throwing them out. The two options to dispose of them are Kovran. The problem with that, Rashi claims, is because they might get uncovered, and therefore it's not the best way to get rid of them. Sorfan is the best way, because then you ensure that there is no way that they can cause any problem. Tosafot, on the other hand, says the reason that Sorfan is considered a Chassid is because a person who burns his nails causes damage to himself. That the Srefat Tziporen Mazeket Adam, V'chein Kol Davar Ba Min Adam. Anything that comes from a human being, any part of them, hair, nails, any growth, is detrimental to burn them. And therefore, that's why he's called a Chassid over here. Because despite the fact that burning the nails is detrimental to the individual, nevertheless, he burns them in order to protect others from being damaged by them. And that's why he's called a Chassid, and that's why, versus a Kovran, who has no, doesn't affect him in any way, and he's protecting others, but there's still that risk that they could be exposed again. Someone who lets blood and then afterwards cohabitates. Person who bloodlets and then afterwards immediately goes and cohabitates. He has weak children. If both the wife and the husband had bloodlet, and then vishimshu avilo banim balei ratan, then he has children that are super weak. And Rashi says over here that they have a sheretz b'moach, they have some sort of growth within the head that causes the problem. Gemara, in many places, in terms of cohabitation and the birth of the creation of a fetus, that the experience of the husband and wife have impact on the fetus itself. That means both what they're looking at, if they see something, they look at something, or how they're feeling here where they bloodlet, which leaves a weakness in them. The Gemara's assumption is that that will be passed to the fetus if they cohabitate in that state. So it's only if you didn't eat anything after bloodletting. But if you taste something, then it's not a problem. So here, this is the rayo that after you donate blood, that you have to eat and drink before you get up and leave. So there, here you have some practical application of that. Asur for a person to cohabitate during the day. Beautiful line. V'afta l'reyacha komocha. My mashmal. How do you learn that? Amar Abaye, so this is something we saw yesterday's daf. Shemi yirabat davar miguna v'titkana alav. Because maybe he'll see something in her that is unpleasant or something that he finds repulsive. And then he will feel negative feelings towards her going forward. So in order to protect the tzniut of the woman, then the proper way to do this is to do it in the dark or at night. So Amar Huna, Yisrael kadoshim heim. Rav Huna says that Bnei Israel are kadosh, and the dusha itself is what prevents them from, or should prevent them from, cohabitating during the day. Now it's not clear here from the Gemara. It seems like Rav Huna is giving a different answer to Rav Chista. Rav Chista is saying that it's an issue of avta l'reicha kamocha. Rav Huna is saying that it's an issue of kedusha, that it's improper that someone who's kadosh doesn't act in this way. What's interesting is why, which might lead you back to Rav Chista. But in the end, he does seem to be indicating a different reason. If the house is dark, I mean, if you can simulate the effects of nighttime, then it's fine as well. Talmud Chacham uses his ksut, his own tunic, his talit, whatever it is that he's wearing, and he can mishmesh mitato. Again, the idea of simulating the effects of night, which means that it's dark, it accomplishes or solves the problem. Now that's clear according to Rav Chista that that's true, because the whole problem is the visibility, the ability to see is the problem. So if you're able to create the conditions where one's sight is obscured, then that's fine. In terms of Rav Huna, it says, Yisrael kedoshim heim, mishmeshim mitotam. Question is, do these qualifications help? It seems from the order of the Gemara that they would help as well, and that would lead us back to why is it that those that are kadosh are not mishamesh mitodem ba yom, might lead you back to the reason of Rav Chista. So Tznan, our Mishnah says, O tishamesh lo araner. Our Mishnah explicitly says that Beit Shammai says you have two choices. Either use separate edim throughout the night for every biyah, or you need light there in order to check the Edim between each bia. There it sounds like you can be mishamesh lo'or aner. Ema tivdok lo'or aner. Check them lo'or aner. Not that you're mishamesh. Even though the Mishnah says it, uses the term tishamesh, doesn't mean to cohabitate, but rather you'll check them lo'or aner. Tashma. Afal pisha amru mishamesh min tadol aner. Harizim miguneh. In the first part of the Gemara yesterday when we quoted, we said, even though that it's considered to be something negative or inappropriate to cohabitate to the light of a candle, nevertheless, and then we said the Beit Shammai says you still have to check the Edim, Lo'or Aner. Ema, so now the Gemara wants to amend that and read, Abu Deik Mitato Lo'or Aner, Harze Meguneh. If you check using candlelight, then that is problematic or something that is inappropriate. Rashi explains over here that the proper way to see Marot, and this is what we do today, is to daylight, is through the sun. To see the proper coloring of the Edim and the Damim, you have to look in proper light. So you either have to look at it through the light of the sun, or today they do have lamps that simulate sunlight. Problem with Or Aner is that the darkness and the shadows cast by the candlelight, the flickering of the light, causes the colors to look different, and therefore you will come up with the wrong psak, or the wrong view of what you're looking at. And here we're looking for a tipat dam, you might miss it, or haner. In the end, that's the truth, which is that even though we say that it's not the best way to check, nevertheless, you have no option over here. And so therefore, Beit Shammai says, if you don't want to keep a separate aid for each bia, then you check lo'or aner, because that's the best we can do in the circumstances that we have. And the truth is, we're not checking between bia and bia because of the bia. You're only checking between because you want to use the aid again. Beit Shammai says you could check in the morning. As far as he's concerned, if you use all the aidim, different aidim, you could have checked it in the morning. So the issue is not checking right now, it's the question that you're using a single aid for all the biot. And therefore the or aner will be sufficient in order to allow you to do that, and then you do the fine check in the morning for the final check. Tashma. She beit mun ba'az ha-melech hayu osim gimot varim, umezkirim oton le-shevach. The household of Munbaz, of the king, the royal household, they used to do three things, and the chachamim praised them for this. Hayu mishamshim mitoteyam biyom, they used to cohabitate during the day. They used to check the woman who did the check or the bdikot. They used to do them with the mila parava, which is either cotton or very soft white wool. And they kept the din of tuma and tara with snow. So now the Gemara is going to go through each of these. What are you going to do with that? That they cohabitated during the day. We just said that that is something that's inappropriate. And now you have the Chachamim saying that they are praising them for doing such a thing? They used to check their marot during the day. Again, this is what we said before, that the better way to do it is to check during the day. As Tosafot points out over here, even though Beit Shammai says that you can check the Or Aner, that's because Beit Shammai doesn't require the check at night. We're not checking at night because we need to check for the Marot Damim. We're checking at night because you're using a single aid over and over again. And so that's a different reason to check versus the Marot Adam. Achinami Mistavra, that makes a lot of sense to read it that way. If you think that it really means that they cohabitated during the day, why would you mention them as being praised for that? That's something that we consider inappropriate. What? Forget about being neutral about it. The Chachamim would never praise them for that. So in Achanami, we could praise them for it. Dagav Dika Onashena Meganya Bape. It's very interesting. It says because the individuals will be exhausted at night, and therefore to perform their obligations in terms of anah towards the woman, they'll have to push themselves because they're so tired, and that will make them have negative feelings or disdain for the woman because she is causing them to have to give up their sleep because they want to perform anah. So better that they do it during the daytime when they're feeling up to the task and energetic, and therefore they will have a sense of positiveness associated with it, and that's why the Chachamim were mishabeach them. They used to check, do bdikot with this mila parava. This helps with Shmuel. Says, you're only allowed to do bdikot either with kaden or semenaki virach. Soft, clean, meaning white wool. So that's to be something that's what we do today in terms of bedika cloths. They have to use something very soft and very white. For both reasons. White, because you're trying to get the smallest tipat dam, you're trying to find marot, so the whiter it is, the more visible something is on it. And number two is you need soft so that you don't cause damage through the checking. You don't cause abrasions, which then cause dam to come out. And those abrasions causing dam will be problematic because then they'll get mixed up with dam mikor. Samrav, Hainu Dechiavi Hatam says that when I was back in Eretz Yisrael, saw these stories earlier, Rav was originally studying by Rabbi in Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, if you remember, have a conversation between them. Don't you remember who that Rav was? He was the big gun in Rebbe Shir, but then Rav left for Bavel. So it says, Rav says, when I was back in Eretz Yisrael, Barvesha Batota Vimri, Madbayi Pikule Binema. So they used to announce in Erev Shabbos, who needs cotton for the bread? So Nema, I'm assuming, is referring to like Yosef, by Yosef at Tzadik, where it says, when he says to Eishet Potiphar that he's given me everything except the lechem, over there Chazal look at that as a mashal to the wife. So Nema here being the woman or the wife, lashon nakia, euphemism for the wife, who needs cotton to cohabitate tonight? Because it's the ona of a Talmud Chacham is me Shabbat to Shabbat. So the assumption being that they would be together on that night and they need a din. So they were selling in the shuk or outside. They were making announcements. Who needs cotton? Below you down in my comrade. Rav says, I didn't know what they were talking about, but now I understand. In this context, once I understood this, now I know what they're talking about. Amarov, ane shchake de kitna, worn down linen clothing, male de bdikar, excellent for bdika. In is that really true? Vatane de beimashem, bokimet mitalo be'ed edom, can use a red cloth for obvious reasons. Lo be'ed shachor, not a black cloth, again for obvious reasons, the color doesn't show up on them. Lo bishtan, and not with linen or flax. Ella, you should use pikulim kanin, or tzemer nakivarach, soft, clean wool. Lokasha, habikitna, hadamanidikitna. One of them is talking about flax itself, and one is talking about linen. So flax itself, you can't use, but the manidikitna, clothing that was made out of it, that was made into linen, that you could use. Both are talking about linen clothing. One is new clothing, and one is old clothing. The way Rashi reads, new and old over here, he explains that it has to do with the shchakim levanim, worn down clothing are much whiter, mina chadashim, from the newer ones. The newer ones are not as white, but after a time period when they're worn down, they become whiter. So his distinction is in the whiteness. I would have said or suggested that the difference is in the softness. That we said that the two requirements over here is both that they be soft and they be white. When you're talking about linen, linen up front is very hard and abrasive. Once you've worn it down, linen becomes a much softer material, and then it would be more appropriate to use as an aid. So the last thing they did was noagim tumah v'tara b'shlagim. They used to have tumah and tara with snow. It's not hotam. We have the mishnah in tarot, which is sheleg enu lo ochel v'lo mashket. Sheleg is not classified as food or a drink, because it's not the normal usage of the item, therefore it doesn't attain that status automatically. If he thinks about eating it, again, that's not a normal usage. And therefore doesn't have a status of ochel in terms of tumah. If he thinks about it, then it is mitamei tumat mashkim. Thinks about it as a liquid, then it makes sense. Some people use it as a liquid. It has more properties of a liquid as it melts. And therefore, if you have a machshava to use it as a liquid, then it can have tumat ochlim. Nitma miksato lo nitma kulo. If a part of it becomes tamei, the entirety of it does not become tamei. In that we look at each flake as being an independent unit, and therefore the tuma does not spread from one to the other. Nitar miksato, nitar kulo. On the other hand, if you mitahar a portion of it, the entirety of it is tahor. Somebody says, agufakasha. That makes sense. You have an internal steer here. If a part of it comes to me, then the whole thing is not to me. And then you say that if a part of it becomes tohor, the entirety of it becomes tohor. The memra, the nitma kulo. And the indication of that is that it all became to me. So if it all became to me, that sounds like that if you touch a portion of it, it does become to me, and you can even tahir that. So Amar Abaye, kigon sheviru al avir tanur. Tatarahi da kli cheres. Because the Torah tells us about a kli cheres that afilu malei chardal. That even it's full with mustard seeds, all of them come tamei. So by its suggestion is that the item can come tamei in a single shot, not because of the passing of the tumah from each flake to the next flake, but rather if it's inside the avir, the airspace of a kli cheres. The Torah tells us that anything that's found inside the airspace of a kli cheres, even if it's not touching the walls of the kli cheres, it attains the tumah. So if you have a sheretz inside of a kli cheres, and anything that's found within that airspace of the Kli Cheres attains the same Tumah. We don't say it's only things that are touching the walls of the Kli Cheres are affected by it, Kabbal the Tumah. But even items that are in the airspace itself will attain that tuma or receive that tuma. So that's the way they become tamei. In terms of the tara, the way that you metaher sheleg, we know that it comes to tumat ochlim and tumat mashkim, you cannot be metaheret. A kli or an adam can go to the mikveh and be tahor. Ochel and mashkeh cannot go to the mikveh and become tahor. The one exception to that rule is water. Water can become tahor through what we call hashaka. You take a cup of water and you are what's called zoreya. You plant it back into the mikveh. By putting it into the mikveh, it joins with the waters of the mikveh. By joining the waters of the mikveh, it becomes a single unit of water, and that's mitaheret. The equivalent, as Rashi points out, of zriat truma. If you plant truma and then it grows, it loses its status of tuma. At least midoraita, midorabanan, it might still have that status of tuma. So people, truma, as well as by tuma. If you plant something that is tamei, when it grows back, it is tahor. So we know that zriya, planting, has that effect on an item that it can remove the original status from it. So over here, the water, when you place it into the mikveh, it's like planting the water. Therefore, the sheleg can become tahor kulo. If you take a cup full of snow or a cup full of water, and then you submerge them into the mikveh, all the water becomes tahor. Even though the water is only touching the rim of the cup or the top layer of water, nevertheless, they become a single unit that makes them all tahor. So that's what it means here, that it's nitar miksato, nitar kulo. And the fact that all of it can become tamei, we're talking about, is unique to the properties of a kli cheres that can be tamei anything without touching it. But if any tuma has to move through maga, through touching, then if you touch one of the flakes, that doesn't automatically pass the tuma to the next flake, drops a level every time, meaning that it's nogea, nogea, nogea. So therefore, the tuma will not spread throughout the entirety of this sheleg, of this snow. Tosfot points out over here, which is interesting, there is a machloket throughout Shas about kabbalat tuma v'ochlim. Everybody agrees for ochlim to pass tuma, they have to be a size of a kebetza. Question is, to receive tuma, is there any minimum shear? Generally, throughout Shas, most of the Rishonim believe that it's koshu. Any amount can. The Rabbeinu Tam has an unusual shita, and Rashi quotes it on occasion. Rashi quotes the shita as well, that anything that is less than a kebetza cannot receive tuma as well. So over here you have a problem, because the statement of Abayi says that when it comes to a kli cheres can make even melo chardal, even a mustard seed tamei. Well, mustard seeds are less than a kebetza. So what does it mean that a mustard seed can become tamei? But that's what we're saying over here, that each individual seed is separate. Nevertheless, the kli cheres is mitamei all of them. So you see that each seed becomes tamei. So the answer is that don't take that literally. It just lav dafka melo chardal. It doesn't literally mean a mustard seed. They're just talking about smaller items. Items where each item is distinct, they can be mekabel tuma and kli cheres because it's not dependent on maga, on them touching, but rather being in the airspace. So the Rabbeinu Tam has to work his way out of this because he doesn't think that a size of a chadal is enough to be mekabel tuma. Right, next is the Mishnah. It's a very difficult Mishnah that has to do with the anatomy of the woman. Most of it's pretty clear over here. The problem has to do with, when we get into the Gemara, exactly what their view of the anatomy was. So mashal mashluch hakamim b'isha. Chamim created a parable by the woman to explain the anatomy. A cheder v'apruzdor. When it comes to the cheder is referring to the uterus. Pruzdor referring to the vaginal canal. V'haliyah. And then there is the attic that sits above them, which is true. If a woman is laying on her back, the uterus is towards the back of the woman, and then the vaginal canal also underneath. Sitting on top of them, when the woman is lying down, is the bladder and the urethra. So the reproductive system is on the bottom, and that's what we're referring to, the uterus and the vaginal canal. And the urinary system and urinary tract sits right on top of them. The bladder and the urethra sit on top of them. So that is the understanding of the enemy, which is correct. So dama cheder tamei. Blood that exits or emanates from the uterus is tamei, because that's dama mekor. Dama aliyah tahor. That blood that emanates from the bladder is tahor, because it's not coming from the uterus. Nimsa bepruzdor. If it's found in the pruzdor, in the vaginal canal, sfeiko tamei. There we have a safek about it. Vish cheskoto min hamekor. Safek tamei, because we assume it came from the mekor, from the uterus. Rami bar Shmuel, Rav Yitzchak bar Rav Yehuda, Tanu nida bei Rav Huna. They were learning halachot nida, the gemara of nida, in Rav Huna's base medrash. Ashchinu Rabba bar Rav Huna. Rabba, Rav Huna's son, finds them, the atvei v'kamrei, and he heard them saying this. Acheder mi bifnim v'apruzdor mi bachutz. The cheder is on the inside, and the uterus is found deeper inside the woman and below. V'apruzdor mi bachutz. and the vaginal canal comes to the outside, and the bladder of the urethra sits on top of both of them. Now this is the difficult part. There is a passageway between the reproductive system, meaning the vaginal canal, and the urethra. Now the problem is that we don't have such a thing. That doesn't exist in the anatomy of a woman. That there is no connection between the reproductive and urinary systems in a woman. As opposed to a man where the two systems exit together, by the woman the systems are completely separate. They both have their own orifices to exit the woman. That is for the urinary system as well as their reproductive system. They do, or they are obscured, both of them, by the Liba majora, liba minora, so they obscure together as they exit the body. But in terms of their independence, they are completely independent. And so over here, this is the difficulty with the Gemara, is this issue of the lul, that there's some passageway. I don't know if that was some artery or vein that looked like it created some sort of passageway between them, but no such passageway does exist. So they were explaining this. If nimsa min alul vilifnim, svekotame. If it's found before that passageway between them, then svekotame, because the assumption is that it came from the mikor. Min alul v'chutz, from that passageway outward, then svekotahor, because there the assumption is that it came from the urinary tract. So atav amar le'avua, he went and told his father. Rabbi Rav Huna went back to his father Rav Huna and said what they were saying. And he said, svekotame amartlan? Is that what you taught us? That svekotame? Va'anan shechazkato min ha-makor tznan. Our Mishnah says the chazok is from makor. It sounds like it's tamei vadai. So malei ana hachikamina. So Rav Huna says, no, this is what I said. Min alul v'lifnim vadai tamei. If it's before that connecting bridge between the urinary system and the reproductive system, then it's clearly tamei, because the only way it could have gotten there is from the makor, from the uterus. Min alul v'lachutz svekotame. From the lul outward, then you're in a safek tum'ah, because there are two possibilities of the dam got there, either from the makor, or because of this passageway, it's possible it came through the bladder or the urethra. So because of that, there is a safek whether it's tamei. So Amar Abaye, Maishnam in alul vilachutz, the sfeko tamei. Why is it from the lul and outward that you consider it to be tamei? The dilma shachata u mecheder ato. Because maybe she laid on her stomach face down, and then it came from the cheder. It came from the uterus. Min alul lifnim. Why don't you say the same thing when it comes to the before this bridge? Minami ema izdakra umi aliyah ata. Why don't we say that she laid on her back and it came down from the aliyah? So again, based on the anatomy that we have talked about until now, we said that the reproductive system is towards the back of the woman or below the woman. So therefore, it sits in the bottom and the aliyah, the bladder and urethra sit on top. If you believed that there was a passageway between them, if a woman was laying on her back, there's a likelihood that whatever was in the urinary system would drain down into the vaginal canal or into the prusdor. And the opposite would be true the other way around. If a woman was lying on her stomach, then the likelihood is that the blood from the cheder, which sits at the lowest point, now is at the highest point, and would drain down into the area of the vaginal canal. So what the explanation of Abaye says over here, I don't understand. The reason that you suggest that from the lul and outward came from the possibility from the cheder, from the uterus, even though it seems more likely that it came from the urinary system, because that sits higher up. Since it sits higher up, the more likelihood is that it came from there. So why is it that we suspect that the blood got there because of the uterus? It's because we assume that Moman might have laid on her stomach. She might have laid face down. She lies face down. She moves the reproductive system above the urinary system. By doing that, the blood could have drained into the, what we call the urinary system or the exit tract. So if you say that's true, then what about the opposite situation in which she lays on her back? She lays on her back, then the urinary system sits above the reproductive system, and there's a likelihood that the blood could have come back from the urinary system back into the reproductive system and sit behind the lul, even before the lul in the system. Correct. That's what Rabbi says. Alam Abayi, Batar Chosha Azlat. If you're going to be suspicious of blood moving around, then it'll always be a safek, because depending on the position of the woman, you can create such a safek. So if you're going to be suspicious or suspect that blood moved because of the position of the woman, you have to look at both possibilities, and both possibilities makes everything into a safek. On the other hand, if you're going to go ibat the chazaka azlat, if you're going to go after the chazaka, I mean, a little of name vaday tamei, then for the woman inward should be vaday tamei, because the chazaka is in normal situations, in a normal posture, the blood that's found in the pruzdor before the lul came from the mikor, came from the uterus. That's the most likely scenario. That's the chazaka where that dam comes from, and therefore it'll be vaday tamei. I mean, a lul v'lachot, vaday tahor. From the lul and outward, the underlying assumption being that the more likely source of the dam in that outer chamber would be from the urethra, because if it came from the mikor, you should also find the dam further back. The fact that you're only finding it in the outer area and not in the inner area is indicative of the fact that it probably came through the urinary system. So therefore, it's chazaka that it's tahor. So tani Rabbi Chiya, dam nimtza b'pruzdor, chavin alav al-bi'at mikdash, chavin alav et tuma. Rabbi Chiya says, any blood that's found in the pruzdor in the vaginal canal, you're chayav, it's mamish tamei. We know that for sure it came from the uterus, and therefore, if you go into the mikdash, you are chayav, and if she touches, comes into contact with chuma, we're soreifet. It's vaday tomei. Rav Kedina Amar, ain't chayvin alav el biat mikdash, ain't sorfin alav el tichuma. Rav Kedina says, we're not magdirit ke vaday tomei, ela ke safek tuma. So lahach, lishna da bar abaye, according to the lashon of abaye, that eat butter chashasha azlat, that if you go after the chashash, mean that we worry about all the scenarios, Misayla Rav Katina, that works well according to Rav Katina, because then everything's a safek. And that's exactly what Rav Katina says. Any dam found in the pruzdor, no matter where it's found in the vaginal canal, it's always a safek tamei. And that's exactly what Abai says. If you're going to suspect both ways, then everything's a safek. Whether it's found before the lul or after the lul, there's always a suspicion. Upligid Rav Chiya, and that'll be a problem, or he'll be arguing on Rav Chiya. If you go according to Lashon Abai, then you go after Chazaka, which means behind the lul is, before the lul is vaday tamei, after the lul is vaday tahor, then misaylei Rav Chiya, that works well according to Rav Chiya, because Rav Chiya has a situation in which it could be vaday tamei. And we'll say, we'll modify Rav Chiya to say, Rav Chiya, when he said vaday tamei in the pruzdor, means before the lul. Upligid Rav Katina, Rav Katina will be a problem, because for Rav Katina, there is no vaday tuma. There's only safek here. Only safek tuma. And according to that memro in Abaye, if we go after the chazak, it's only vaday tamei and vaday tahor. There is no status of safek. And therefore, the statement of Abaye with chazak cannot accord with the position of Rav Katina in that way. Rav Huna lo plige. Going back to Rav Huna, who says that, mina lul v'fnim is vaday tamei, mina lul v'chutz is safek tamei, then, kan mina lul v'fnim, kan mina lul v'chutz. Again, we can explain it that lulul bifnim, that'll go according to Rabbi Chiya, who says that it's vaday tamei, and lulul vachutz, where he says it's safek tamei, that'll go according to Rav Katina. And v'lo chalkul, according to Rav Huna. They may not be arguing according to Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that Rabbi Chiya and Rav Katina are addressing different parts of the pruzdor, different parts of the canal, which are before the lul and after the lul. Before the lul, it's vaday tamei, after the lul, it's a safek tamei, and they're both right. According to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yitzchak Brei Yehuda, who are learning by Rav Huna, and then afterwards they tell over their memra to Rabba by Rav Huna, to Amre, they say, min alu v'lachut sveko tahor, min alu v'lifnim sveko tamei, hani b'may metukma. Who are they like? How are we ever going to explain this? Hani b'may metukma min alu v'lifnim. Who are you going to explain the alu and inward according to? Lema pligid Rabbi Chiya. You have to say that they argue on Rabbi Chiya, because they're saying Sveko Tamei. Sveko Tamei, according to Rabbi Chiya, there's no way, because they have no Vaday Tamei. Sveko Tahor, that means it's Tahor. So there, clearly, that can't be explained by Rabbi Katina or by Rabbi Chiya. Must be that Minalub Bifnim is what they're talking about. And that only works according to Rabbi Katina, who says that it's a Sveko Tamei. But according to Rabbi Chiya, who says that it's Vaday Tamei, they have no instance of Vaday Tamei. So when it says, Lokash, that's not a problem. Kam shenimtza bekarka bepruzdor, kam shenimtza begaga bepruzdor. Compared to where the dam is found along the canal. The vaginal canal, if the blood is found on the base or the floor of the canal, then it definitely came from the uterus, because the uterus sits very low down. If blood is to exit through the cervix from the uterus, it would run along the floor of the canal. Dam that is found on the upper part of the canal, there we have to have a suspicion about the blood there. Why is it on the upper part of the canal? It doesn't make so much sense. Had it exited from the uterus, you would have thought that it came, would have been on the floor. The fact that it's on the upper half now enters us into the world of safek tuma. Because now you have a problem. The chazaka is, and the more likelihood is, because it's from the lul b'fnim, it came from the uterus. On the other hand, since it's on the upper wall or the ceiling of the canal, that indicates that's something out of the ordinary. Since it's out of the ordinary, maybe it came from a flowback from the urinary tract that came through the lul. And therefore, we're going to now have a safek tuma. And that'll be the answer to the question over here, which is according to Rami Bar Shmuel, Rabbi Yitzchak Brei, Rabbi Yehuda, being a little bit of name depends where the blood is found. The blood is found on the floor of the pruzdor. In that instance, we'll say it's Badai Tamei, and that will accord with Rabbi Chia. On the other hand, if it's found on the roof of the pruzdor, the ceiling of the pruzdor, in that instance, it will be Safek Tamei, and it will be like Rav Katina, because over there really is a Safek. Why is it only found on the ceiling of the pruzdor, not on the floor of the pruzdor? Rashi points out over here that Lo'olam Batar Chazakah is late. We go after the Chazakah, but over here there's an undermining of the Chazakah. So the Chazakah is that the dam that exits from the uterus will be found in the pruzdor, and what we find in the pruzdor should be Tamei Vadai. But why are we undermining the chazak? We're undermining the chazak because it's not in the usual form. We're finding it in an unusual circumstance. And then we impose our explanation here on Rami Bar Shmuel and Rav Yitzchak Rei de Rav Yehuda. On the other hand, by Abaye, we can't do that. Because Abaye states his reason explicitly. He says, because of chazakah or because of chashosha. Had he meant to differentiate between the upper and lower areas, he should have said it explicitly. By Rami, by Shmuel, and Rabbi Yitzchak Brei de Yehuda, we don't have any reason for their position. So therefore, we can impose on them this reason or differentiate between the ceiling and the floor of the pruzdor. Rashi says we can't impose that on Abaye because Abaye gives his reason, and had he meant to differentiate, he should have said that explicitly. On the other hand, Tosafot says that he doesn't like that explanation in Rashi, that that's not the reason the Gemara doesn't explain it according to Abaye that way. Erenir lefarish, Abaye lek lukmei ked Rabbi Chiya bekarka pruzdor, came into afilu min aluv lechutz deba min aliyah kedarko v'karov chayish l'dam ha'makor imkein min aluv lefnim v'karka pruzdor milta depshitei demin acheder ata v'lo abitzarcha b'chil ha'shmi'inan. Says that according to Abaye, in the outer area, we consider it to be a sfeikot tamei. Even though that's a far-fetched scenario, even though it's found in the pruzdor, and nevertheless we say that it's tamei, then certainly if it's found on the floor of the pruzdor in the inner area, that it's tamei, I don't need Rabbi Chiya to tell me that. It's so obvious that it's vaday tamei, that Abaye doesn't need you, Rabbi Chiya, to say that. And that's why the Gemara did not explain Abaye that way in Rabbi Chiya.
So obviously it's vaday tamei, because that's exactly what you were finding down, you know.
Because of the outer area, where we say that the overwhelming evidence should be that it's from the urinary tract, nevertheless, we suspect that it is dam tamei. So if you go back to the area where the chazaka is strongest, that it should come from the mekor, then you don't need Rabbi Chiya to tell you that on the floor of the pruzdor, that that's where the dam is tamei. If that's true, then you can't differentiate between gag and karka, and that's why we didn't explain before. When we said Abaye's memra of Suffolk argues on Rabbi Chiya, over there we said we don't explain it to differentiate between karka and gag, because that's not the way we explain Rabbi Chiya according to Abaye. Step over here.